Hello there, and welcome to the Press Summer of HPC podcast. I'm your host for this episode, Perry Gibson, and today I'm joined with Will Mayers and Christian Merritt from the company known as Alsys Flight. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi there.
You're joining us from somewhere just outside of Oxford, is that correct?
Yes, that's right. A little town called Bicester. I'd say sunny Bicester, but it's just started raining.
Yeah.
Well, I suppose the good weather can't be keeping up indefinitely.
Absolutely.
So I guess I'll do an introduction for both of you and Alsys Flight as an organization. Many of you being familiar with many of you listeners out there being familiar with Press know it's a number of institutional organizations, generally government or academia affiliated, that operate their own high performance computing centers and use this to carry out a variety of research. However, HPC came out of a lot of the private sector. If you look at the history of it, and today it's continued to evolve. So Alsys Flight is involved in the cloud provisioning of HPC systems. So we have Christian Merritt, who has more than 15 years of experience in enterprise software and change management under our belt. Christian entered the HPC space via Alsys Flight over 3 years ago with a focus on new platform adoption from a business and marketing perspective. Working as part of the Alsys Flight team, her aim is to capture the requirements necessary to build and run solutions to meet strategic goals within the client's company or institution. She's been lucky to translate business success into blogs, case studies, talks, and even present research on things that work in adopting new technologies in HPC, and a few things that didn't. Kristen holds a degree in classics from the University of Florida, and she's a person who I contacted to try and set up this episode. So thank you very much for that. And did you think there's anything missing from your bio? You think anything worth adding?
Gosh, it sounds like I'm really important.
Yeah, we're bowing here. It's great.
Yeah. I kind of fell into tech is the best way to put it. So I'm what you would consider a non-traditionalist. For anyone out there like listening on your podcast and things like that, what I have to say just to add to it is that you don't have to be into computer science and you don't have to do math. You can come at high performance computing, at science from a completely different angle. And so I'm really grateful to be working with the team at Alsys to help make these kind of connections, especially because cloud is so new and is only just now being accepted in high performance computing, and finding good ways and good stories and good ways to help other people get into HPC, which I think is great.
Oh, yeah, and I guess coming from the non-computer science background, you're bringing a lot of novel skills that perhaps what many people might think of being, like folk coming in from traditional routes may not have. So it's really bringing, a lot to any team that you're a part of.
No, I do agree. Classics was, of course, the original major, the original thing that people used to go to university to get their degrees in. Sadly, there's not a huge need for Latin translation in my line of work, but I'm really glad to be here, and I'm really glad to be learning about new things, new languages, the wonders of HPC.
Oh, well, excellent. Thank you. And I guess I'll talk a little bit about you, Will. I have here some text about you. Will Myers has Mayers has 20 years of experience in high performance computing and storage systems, and has built large environments for the UK government, universities, and commercial customers. He's worked for both corporates and SMEs, that's small and medium enterprises, for those of you not down on the TLAs or three letter acronyms. Helping customers to optimize their scientific computing workflows across many different domains, including engineering, bioinformatics, physics, media, and finance. Will holds a degree in computer science, biochemistry, and artificial intelligence from Durham University in the UK. Now, I guess is that one degree or several degrees? Because I mean, that's quite a lot, quite a long list for a degree there.
This was a few years ago, I'll be the first to admit. So, at the time, biochemistry and artificial intelligence were carefully interwound. And since doing my degree, AI kind of did nothing for about 10, 15 years until the recent GPU evolution has meant a lot of movement, really, in the last 5 to 10 years. So, back then it was let's say politely theoretical rather than any practical applications we might have today.
Well, I mean, I've heard stories around the campfire from some of my elders about the great AI winter. So is that something that you experienced then?
Yeah, all of that good stuff. I think one of the interesting things about that sort of technology is how it's become so ubiquitous, so prevalent over the last few years. AI is one of those special technologies that can be bolted on the beginning or the end of a huge number of different workflows. So, it really is, it's a buzzword, but it's potentially game-changing because it can refine your workload before you actually start running something. So it is quite different to traditional HPC, but certainly has a lot of applications.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, with compute being what it is or what it's become in the past 10 years, it's, you know, it's been so much more enabled, even if, you know, the algorithms and lines of thought behind it were around before then. So I guess I'll say in 2010, you joined Alsys Software, which is now Alsys Flight, as a software development and system integration company based in the UK. And now you're responsible for building and delivering solutions for customers utilizing a wide range of open source and custom developed software. I guess could you, first of all, could you talk a little bit about your role, and then Christian will bring it back to you?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. So 10 years ago, everybody was building HPC clusters using servers, using bits of hardware, little bits of wire, that sort of thing. So the role of the integrator 10 years ago was really about assembling clusters, delivering, building them up. So as a pre-sales consultant and a sort of a technical consultant, really it was my role to design these things, to put them together, to know what would work well together, and really to try and meet the customer's needs using whatever was available on the market. Now, sort of fast forward to where we are now, a lot of those technologies have stabilized. So if we look at things like Enterprise Linux, things like domain controllers for Linux, even things like InfiniBand and high-speed Ethernet, those things have become a lot more stable. We're spending less time compiling kernel modules now, which we used to do 10 years ago. But as well as that, the hardware side of things, there's a huge range of clouds, public cloud, private cloud, loads and loads of different capabilities which are there that you can construct environments from. And looking at the other end of the spectrum, there's a huge range of different places your software, your applications, your workflows can come from. So 10 years ago, it may have just been compiling up a chemistry code or a mathematics code, a physics, something like that. Now we have code that's delivered in Docker containers. It's delivered as abstract languages, sort of Python, Ruby, all sorts of different things. And those things are truly applicable to HPC in a massively wide range of different areas, from quantum chemistry right the way up to bioinformatics, to race cars and engineering. So my role fundamentally hasn't changed, but the range of technologies and the range of different things which those solutions are applicable to, that has sort of broadened a little bit, and it's almost as much about navigating those different things as finding a solution these days.
Oh, so if this sounds right, it seems like you're saying that there's a lot wider range of commodity hardware that you can choose from, but also a lot of the tools have developed to the point where you're maybe not having to grapple with them as much. So a lot of your work isn't so much trying to get them to work, it's trying to decide what's the best tool for the job, and with a variety of workloads emerging, that's you're almost climbing the abstraction ladder a bit. You're not worrying about the blocks themselves, it's how the blocks are connecting and which ones to choose from. Does that seem all right?
Absolutely, yeah. And a key thing in HPC has been those open source fundamentals. And a key principle of open source is that building block approach. It is about reusing modular components to get you up that ladder of delivering your workflow and moving on to the next thing as quickly as possible. So those building blocks, those chunks that we can select from over the last 10 years have become more and more and more sophisticated, right the way up to last year, Alsa's Flight actually had a full cluster in a box that was a single one-click launch on three different cloud platforms, Google, Amazon, and Microsoft. Now, that's taken 10 years of code and bits and pieces and configuring different things, right the way down to pressing a single launch button through our flight website to a fully functional cluster. So it's another building block. A lot of customers would take that cluster, they'd add their own applications, they'd tweak the job scheduler. They would build on top of that. It's just an example of another another building block that does a particular thing.
Well, thank you. And I think we will circle back to talk a little bit about using the, some of the larger cloud providers systems, GCP, AWS, and that kind of thing. But if we can talk again to Kirsten, we can perhaps get some perspectives. So it seems that you're doing a lot of requirement specifications for your different customers. Is that correct?
It's part of my job. Yeah. A lot of what I do with I was brought into ALSA's as I was the first non-technical hire is the best way to describe what I do. Despite the fact that there's plenty of people here who do some amazing work that I wouldn't consider technical. I focus primarily on new platform adoption, so cloud right now is the kind of way to go. And we were working a lot with that concept of the building blocks. In cloud, things are a lot more abstract. So we spend a lot of time with the requirements gathering, asking, sadly, I would say, non-technical questions. Many times when approaching a new technology, especially something as abstract as cloud, you kind of have to get the motivation behind it. Cloud in and of itself is something that everyone can use. Anyone can go on to any of the major public cloud providers right now and do HPC. But sometimes you have to understand motivation, how long something needs to run for, where they're connected to, who they're collaborating with. I've even talked to people about the political aspects behind their systems. There are rules and regulations that, a piece of hardware and a cloud and how they collaborate with one another. So where I focus a lot is kind of the gathering of the business detail behind those requirements, because when we get down to the meat, the reason why someone is working on a project or would like to do HPC in the cloud, we want to get that kind of teased out so that you can actually ask some really solid technical questions behind it. Because talking to my colleague Will, that you just heard from, there's a lot of complexity out there. And once you can understand the motivators behind why someone's doing something, you can help to build the solution which will actually solve their problem.
Oh, so it sounds like there are so many options now with cloud providers and a lot of caveats that come with each of those options, that it's not just, do you want version 4 or version 5 of this bit of software? You're asking questions like, what sort of, level of security do you require for the data, and what other sort of questions might you be asking to try and tease information about what your client's needs are?
That's correct. We really kind of start at the top. Who's the team? Because when you do any type of serious HPC project and you want to work cross-platform, so that's the hybrid thing that everyone alludes to in HPC, you need to understand the people that are playing a part in that job, in that project that you're wanting to run. Cloud specifically is currently geared for ephemeral or temporary projects, currently. Obviously, these things can change. And so we talk to them about time scales. We talk to them about time versus cost. How fast do you want something to run? How slow could you have something run? There's a lot of little silly factors you don't think of with hardware, whereas when hardware is a known thing, usually you already know the system you're going on. You can optimize yourself for that system itself. You know the players, you know the rules, and cloud is a little wild west still. And so there's kind of questions we ask about it is team down to time level, down to even some people don't even know what they need to run it on because they're just used to, well, I ran it on this system. So we learn about that system. And then we say, well, when you get on that system, how well does it run? Oh, well, it takes me forever to optimize it. And maybe we're trying to understand then that maybe that system needs to be changed, instance type, storage, and things like that. So it's a constant changing of parts and pieces. But I think that's where we are right now. The future could hold much easier answers. So we're just trying to gather that information, homogenize it a little bit, go from project to project, make a good process out of it, and give people some solid building blocks.
So, yeah, just trying to get a lot of in-house knowledge of what this still emerging domain is like and trying to share it with your customers.
I do a lot of public-based research in cloud. We were really lucky. Several of our academic institutions here are real happy to contribute. It's where all of our case studies currently come from. Commercial world is a bit difficult to get the sign-offs for it. But we are working very hard to go around and do talks on what we've learned. And sometimes we're really lucky, our customers will come and they'll tell the truth, which I think is very important as we go forward in this, to be as transparent as we can be so that others can grow off of HPC.
So I guess overall, what would you say the mission statement of the of ALSAs is right now?
Really, our mission statement is to try and inform and assist customers to build what it is they need. What they used a year ago is very different to what they're using now and will be different to what they need in another year. So not only, HPC traditionally has looked at performance, it's looked at going as fast as possible, but increasingly workloads are needing to use different frameworks, different architectures. Perhaps the workload is bursty, perhaps there's a lot of data, and you really can improve the situation by using different types of hardware or a combination of cloud and hardware, or building up your training facilities so your users are enabled. There are so many different facets to actually optimizing your workflow from end to end. It's a huge number of different places to look at. So really, that's what we're about. Enabling customers to look at all the different options for them and to choose and to find something that works best for them.
So you're starting to view hardware as something that is also ephemeral and can be switched out just by a few lines of a configuration file, rather than traditionally operating on an on-premises site, which is a bit more rigid, but I'm sure many of our listeners know what the advantages would be, but why would you decide to go for a cloud option instead?
So at the moment, buying hardware and sticking it in a building somewhere can be a lot cheaper than running on a public cloud platform. But that assumes that you have the building, you have the data center, you've got power cooling, you've got people to staff it, look after it, which a lot of sites do, absolutely. It assumes that you have the foresight to know what your workload is going to be for the next 3, 4, 5 years, however long you're planning to keep that hardware. It assumes that you are happy to spend that capital, that big chunk of money, you're happy to spend that up front. And it assumes that you're going to be able to keep it busy for the vast majority of the time. You've got a good utilization figure there. Now, if all those assumptions hold true, then absolutely, it can be a lot cheaper to buy hardware, run it on-prem, decommission it after 3 years, put more hardware in. That may be the most cost-effective model for you. But if you're not sure, what your workload is going to do, and you're not sure how busy you're going to be in a year's time or 2 years' time, or maybe you don't have that capital to invest up front, then cloud can be a really good way to get you the resources you need quickly and effectively and cost effectively as well. Now, logically, most sites have an element of the first thing, an element of the certain, and they have an element of the uncertain, of the research, of the R&D. So what we're finding as we work with our customers is actually it is a hybrid story. Maybe the heavy lifting is done by some on-prem hardware, but maybe their research and development or their disaster recovery system or their backup, maybe that is handled by public cloud. And making those things work together, making them interoperable, giving the customer control of those is something that we can do quite easily and quite cost effectively with the Flyte platform.
Can I quickly say, just to give you a quick example of what would be a leap So we had a case study where we've got people who do image mapping, correct? And currently image mapping is primarily done on workstations, small levels of processing and things like that. And these are people who are looking at moving up to high performance computing. The particular case study was in regards to seeing how many images they could process at scale to prove it was possible. And just to make things more difficult, because they like to make it more difficult, they wanted to collaborate with people across the country of Africa. So it's one of those things where they didn't want to go out and buy the machines. They didn't know if they needed to, if it could be done. So what they did instead was they secured funding and they got some stuff together, and we got involved to help them pack up their IP and get everything sorted and get it up there into the cloud so that they could try it. And they were able to double their image processing size in their first test. So those are like that's a realistic example that you can kind of go out there and say, okay, this is why they go into cloud, because they were actually trying to figure out whether or not they needed to buy the hardware.
Sure. So a real sort of test and development environment. But the added benefit for that particular project, their collaborators, the people actually receiving the data, were all over the world. So having it on a public cloud platform as a shared data set really opened up access to everybody who needed it. So that's increasingly we're finding with customers, the collaboration with other people is particularly important.
Well, I see, because I guess it's all very well and good to use on-premises hardware if you're already part of an organization that has it and have filled out the relevant forms, and there often access control seems to be a real challenge. But with this case study that you've mentioned, if you've got like dozens or hundreds of people, onboarding all of them and setting up remote access to like the on-premises system, even if not all these people are necessarily fitting into your threat model, might be a bit risky. But having a cloud HPC system allows you to get rid of some of that red tape and paperwork, perhaps. Is that one of the advantages that you found during that project?
Yep, absolutely. Without having to worry about the bandwidth of your local internet connection as well. That can be really important too in some of these places.
Yeah, I guess the data centers that these organizations are using are going to be very well connected in terms of the public internet. You're going to get massive amounts of bandwidth. So I guess for a bunch of applications, that's actually quite useful. And you're saying that often your organization has been using the likes of GCP, AWS, Azure maybe? Like what sort of, like when we say cloud, a lot of people can think of it as being quite abstract, but ultimately it's private companies with physical locations around the globe managing multiple machines and then having a number of products that run on top of those. So what sort of companies are you using for this sort of thing?
We specialize in public cloud is probably the easiest, most accessible if we're talking about people who are listening who want to do things. So we have run different tests and our case studies that we're putting together. Our published ones, just so you know, are on AWS, but we are working currently with Microsoft Azure and Google Cloud, mostly because AWS sort of came first in terms of being the HPC viable platform, and the rest have kind of followed suit. We also have done what would be called private cloud. We've done specialist stuff. There's like IBM. I know we did some work with them in Australia back before they became IBM Cloud.
Sure, their software platform.
Yeah, so we've worked across many things. But yeah, when you're talking about public cloud, I had problems with this too when I first started. I just call it public cloud, and I go by the Gartner rules, which currently place it basically when we say AWS, Google, Azure. That's the easiest, most accessible cloud that you can get a hold of right now.
Sure. And our objective as a company is to try and, on behalf of our customers, blur the differences between all those different platforms. So a very early design constraint for our flight HPC environment was that we wanted to offer parity across hardware, sort of bare metal, as well as the three big public clouds and OpenStack and SoftLayer private clouds as well. So anybody running on a flight cluster has pretty much the same features irrespective of whether it's on hardware, cloud, or a virtualization layer.
That seems like an interesting value add, because I've spoken to a number of folk involved in SMEs saying that they've suffered from a certain amount of vendor lock-in on certain public cloud providers because their entire tool chain is built using the assumptions of the particulars of the environment of, say, AWS or whatnot. So even if they could get a slightly better deal by moving, the switching cost is very high. But it sounds like the kind of products you're providing, make that not so much of an issue. Does that sound right?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's critical. Not only for different hardware vendors, because obviously if you bought an IBM or a Dell or an HP or a Lenovo, you want to be able to compete and buy different hardware vendors every few years. That concept works absolutely the same way for a cloud provider. And the way we have customers set up now, where they have a primary on-prem facility, will use one of the public clouds as their disaster recovery facility. So from a usage perspective, from the user logging in and submitting jobs to their Slurm cluster, it's critical that that usage is absolutely identical. So yeah, we spend a lot of time making sure that Flyte can do that for our users.
So as I understand it, public cloud is just the publicly traded companies that are very easy to access. You need an email address and a credit card and off you go. But you've used the term private cloud a fair bit. So I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate what exactly you mean by that.
Sure. Okay. So a bunch of applications these days get delivered in different ways. So if you're a VASP user, you're probably used to compiling it up on the command line and running it through a batch scheduler. But if you're using something like Galaxy for bioinformatics, or if you're running health trials with particular sets of qualified software, you're probably finding that your software is delivered in Docker containers, or maybe even as a virtual machine instance ready to go. Looking even at something fairly traditional like high energy physics, CERN now is delivering a lot of their applications in little virtual machine containers ready to run. So typically an environment that's set up to run those would be set up as a form of a private cloud. And it may be something simple such as Linux running a virtualization layer, which is what CERN do. Or it might be something that's a full self-service private cloud environment like OpenStack. We've got a number of sort of medical bioinformatics style clusters across Europe that are set up with an OpenStack private cloud environment. So one of the things we've targeted for the Flyte platform, obviously you can buy some hardware, you can stick the Flyte environment on top of that and turn it into an HPC cluster. But we wanted to enable the users with access to those private clouds to start up their own HPC clusters to do specific things as well. So we test Flyte on OpenStack. We test it on obviously the big three public cloud providers. So it really is down to the customer's choice as to what makes most sense for them.
In terms of the actual hardware that you're running in, if public cloud is running on AWS or GCP, private cloud is something that you're provisioning, or am I misunderstanding here?
Private cloud, typically it's something like OpenStack. So yeah, we have an integration company as part of ALSA, so we deliver private cloud solutions for customers based on top of hardware from HP and Dell and Lenovo and people. So yeah, that's one of the options. Typically it's part of the analysis we do with the customer to find out, do they need on-prem HPC, do they need on-prem private clouds, do they want to use public cloud? And it's that balance of accessibility, performance, and cost effectiveness, really.
All right, well, I think I'm understanding the distinction now, so thank you very much for that. But would you say that with these options of being able to go with public cloud infrastructure or maybe some more bespoke private cloud stuff, do you think that on-premises HPC is going to die a bit of a death, or do you think there will be a place for it in the future?
I think personally, I think absolutely there is a place for on-prem, but at the moment, probably 90 to 95% of everything HPC at the moment is done on-prem. I think we'll see that percentage start to balance out with public cloud, private cloud as well. And I think the future really depends on actually the rest of enterprise IT. So if your university, if your business, if your corporation is finding that you don't need enterprise IT and you don't need a big data center to put that in, suddenly that data center is not necessarily going to be there to house your HPC cluster as well. And that's the point, I think, that we will see a lot more pervasive public cloud adoption across the board, HPC included.
There's also, I mean, like I said before, that idea of a bit of a Wild West way of doing things. I think there's a lot of technology, a lot of new things out there that cloud releases, and people are just kind of grasping on and consuming. I was reading somewhere that like there's like this idea of new technology, and very rarely does it quote unquote revolutionize. You can use cars. A lot of people like to use cars as a really good way to talk about how like a new technology revolutionizes something. But like in comparison, the microwave, which I remember because I'm old, that in the 1980s was supposed to be like the way everyone was going to cook their food. And it turns out that everyone has a microwave now, but it's part of a system. And so when I think about that, I was like, oh, you know, in my mind, of course, because, again, I don't come out of the hardware background, I'm fine with using cloud. When I graduated a million years ago with my degree, I was using a CRM system based in the cloud. I was using my email already in the cloud. I didn't care. But as time progresses, you know, it's there's things that will have its place. And so I think that going back and saying, yeah, there's a bit of a balance in between that. It could be that cloud in the end is like the microwave, really. You know, you use it, you heat up your new projects in it, you decide, oh, they're going to stay there, or, oh, actually, it's more cost effective if I, you know, get all the ingredients and make it here myself. So it's that kind of way you need to approach it. I don't think people should be scared of it, that's for sure. There's some really great things that cloud can do and that can open up for people. I've been very impressed with our client base and their novel ways of thinking about the approach, especially with disaster recovery. That was like some of the neat stuff we're working on right now. And ways of saying, well, yeah, it's got its spot. So don't totally discount cloud and don't totally discount hardware. Not yet.
Yeah. So even if, you know, many of our listeners will be involved in the Trace organization and they'll have access to very large clusters and not only ones at their native centers, but also ones further afield in other centers. And I think with that resource sharing, these clusters are seeing like some pretty high utilization. But you're saying that, you know, people should be thinking that maybe there are some situations and projects that could really, you know, like benefit from taking a slightly different approach and integrating, you know, maybe something into their project, not just using what they've got.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way that we look at cloud. A good point, especially when people like the Praise folk, like yourselves, have access to these humongous systems and you have a wonderful network and really good ideas floating around. It's a place where you could use cloud to experiment or prove a point, prove some ideas. You don't have to go in. You don't have to go all in. I've really enjoyed watching some of the work that people have done in academia, building up business cases using cloud. We have a client who's built up a business case for buying more GPUs. It's things like that kind of help. It kind of helps feed what we call, I'm calling it the virtuous cycle rather than the vicious cycle, because the problem with just having hardware in your life or not looking beyond hardware, basically, is that hardware does degrade over time. And so you've got to kind of keep an evolution going with where you want to head to next. And being selective with your cloud projects, really understanding the motivation behind why you want to do it, where it could lead. Could it lead to more hardware, or actually could it lead to a cloud service? There's a lot of different directions you can go. So I really say to those out there who are blessed with good access to hardware, good access to networks, that cloud could be an option for making those networks even better.
So I guess kind of like you could think of it, if you've got access to the cluster, then cloud could be maybe a way for you to experiment with spinning out. If you're thinking that a project could perhaps be commercialized or at least turned into something that's a bit more out in the open, or spinning in, if I'm allowed to invent terms on the fly, where, like you're saying, people are making a case to buy more GPUs or whatever for their cluster, you know, because maybe it might not be clear that there's a research need for it just yet.
Yeah, that exactly. And I think from a software maturity perspective, just the ability to be able to rerun and prove your workload on a clean environment. So when the new hardware cluster does roll up in 2 years' time or 4 years' time, you understand what you're doing. You understand all the different parts of your workflow. So that making it portable, that preventing you being locked in, not necessarily to a particular vendor, but also to a particular cluster, particular environment, yes, just means that as we know IT, yeah, we know enterprise IT, it's all about change control. It's all about managing the process of getting from this year to next year. All of those things are made so much easier in a cloud environment where you can try things out, where you can break things, where you can throw them away and start again. We need to be thinking in that sort of mature way about our software and our workflows. Otherwise, we do tend to end up in cul-de-sacs of not being able to migrate off a sort of a five-year-old machine.
So, you know, if I'm wanting to get started doing some cloud HPC stuff today, and I would rather not spend a week trying to battle setting up servers myself, where would you recommend I begin?
There's two places that we can offer that are actually just perfect for students and for researchers such as yourself. We do have a cluster, the joking we put cluster to box. We have a flight launch platform, which basically you just sort of apply to us for some credits. We've got a page where there's the pre-packed clusters are there. It will launch in 5 to 15 minutes, depending on what it is you're after. You can put your own applications on there. This particular one is currently based off of AWS, so we would also send you the documentation for things like storage, getting yourself started, that sort of thing. We also have just launched our OpenFlight HPC open source project. So if you are more advanced with the HPC, so maybe just not maybe you've got experience in HPC, you're trying to figure out how to, you would like to put together a cluster of your own up in the cloud. That particular open source project is more geared less away from those who want to just get on with the research, which we've had people do mostly test applications, and get into the idea of the architecture, the platform, like how it all works together and plugs in. Because one of the things we learned along our journey with cloud and with hybrid is that either you do have the people who just want to get on with it, and then you've got the people who want to customize it, break it apart, see how it works for them. So those are two options. They are free at point of use. We also can help people who would like to be guided towards the programs that our public cloud partnerships all offer, which they do as well. So not to talk them down, they're wonderful groups of people. Really glad we have those relationships. So yeah, so that gets you started.
Cool. Thank you very much for that. And I think we've covered quite a lot, and it's been quite a long episode, so we might try and wind things down now. But if you've got any further comments, I'd appreciate it.
Basically, just to say that one of the things we try and do is add back to the community. So Christian's talked a bit about OpenFlight HPC. That's our open source project, which essentially is the whole software code base for Flight and all the different bits and pieces we do. We will be launching that at Supercomputing this year in November, so we'll have a little booth there. So very happy to talk to anybody who wants to stop by. Just come and say hi. We can give you some examples of the open source project and get you started with some flight launch codes, or just for a chat about your experiences with cloud. Very happy to talk to anybody there.
Thank you. That kind of community engagement is good, and I guess always looking for research collaborators as well, I guess.
Always.
So, I guess my final question, which I've been asking on all the prior episodes, is I come from Scotland, and I've got to advocate for it as I travel around the world. And living down south, as we say, I'm sure you'll probably have heard of it, but have either of you two been, and what's your impression of it?
My best friend lives in Scotland, So I love it. I've spent time up in Edinburgh, and I was actually married in a little tiny town called Dunoon, which is outside of Glasgow.
I am aware of Dunoon. It's Dunoon, a funny wee tune, we say.
Yes, in the little tiny manor house. I was married there 19 years ago. I love Scotland.
I was up in Scotland 2 or 3 weeks ago for, we did a project with the University of Edinburgh, upgrading one of their clusters, and I managed to get caught in the middle of Edinburgh on the first day of the Fringe Festival. So, it was chaos. Great fun.
Oh, yeah. Fringe Edinburgh can be an interesting time if you have any destination you want to go to. Was that job with the University of Edinburgh proper or the Edinburgh Parallel Computing Centre?
That one was the University of Edinburgh proper, so we installed their EDI PC cluster. It's about a 300-400 node Dell HPC cluster up there.
Oh, very, very nice. We've got a few of the Summer of HPC cohort up in Edinburgh, so hopefully they'll be mildly excited for the shout-out. But I guess thank you very much both for such a informative and episode, and a little bit different from looking at a pure research side of things, trying to understand that HPC is much wider than running some experiments. It's also about the infrastructure and the supporting organizations around that, both private and public sector. So Will, Kirsten, from Alsace Flight, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good talking to you.
Okay.